Welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, January 21st, 2013, and this is episode 34. My name is Rob. With me today, as usual, is Jason.
Hey, Rob.
Hey, we also have a very special guest with us today. We have Anissa Jones on the line. Hi.
Hello.
How's it going?
It's going wonderfully, and how are you guys?
We are fantastic.
We're fantastic. So this is, we talked about this at the end of the year.
Right.
We're doing our new guest host series.
Right.
And Anissa volunteered to be our first person, which we are very happy about. She's being our guinea pig here.
Yeah. So
yay,
thank you.
Yay, guinea pig.
Yeah. It's going to be a lot of fun, I think. You're hanging out with us today to just kind of chat about what we've been playing. You're going to bring a mechanic here for us to talk about, and then I believe you have a game to pitch for us later in the show, right?
I sure do.
Okay, very cool. So you are from Colorado, right?
I am.
Yeah.
Near Denver.
Near Denver.
Suburb.
Okay, yep. Cool. What got you into gaming?
I guess a lot of the same way that most people get into it. It's just the family board game night, that sort of deal.
Yeah.
And it just evolved from there. I've been a gamer as far as PC and platform games. So the board games more in depth has been the last couple of years. But I'm really enjoying it. So I think it's going to stick.
Good. That's good to hear. And you guys, Jason and Anissa, you guys have actually hung out before.
We did.
Yeah.
When my family took a trip to Colorado, Anissa and her family were nice enough to come meet us in Estes Park. We had some dinner. It was a good time.
It was a great time on your epic trip to Colorado.
Yes, it was epic. Yeah. That night after having dinner with them
was when
I was almost eaten by a bear.
Oh, the bear story.
True story.
Yeah, okay.
The bear story.
Cool. Cool. Well, what have you been playing recently?
Let's see. Christmas, I got a couple games.
Ooh.
And then shortly after that is my birthday. So I actually got kind of a lot of games.
Ooh.
But the one that really sticks out that we've been playing a lot more is Takenoko.
I have no idea what that is. No.
Oh, it's so far, it's just completely up my alley. It's adorable. It's about a panda bear. And it's basically, the setup is... The Chinese government are trying to make peace with the Japanese government, so they gift them a panda bear. And it is your responsibility as both the gardener and sort of this third person, omnipotent person. Mm-hmm. You try and feed the panda bear, keep it safe, and you at some point control the weather. So there's a lot of different aspects to it. All my kids, I have three kids, and all of us have been playing it together, and everybody seems to really enjoy it. So
that sounds really unique.
That sounds very different and kind of cool, yeah.
I like it.
Really cool. Has a modular sort of board that you place down.
Uh-huh.
And then you play as like three different characters plus yourself. It's really kind of interesting. So.
Cool.
I got to check this out now. Let's check it out at Gen Con.
What is it called again?
It's Takenoko or Takenoko.
Takenoko, Takenoko.
And then, yeah.
Something like that. Okay.
So I'm sure I'm butchering it, but it's a lot of fun.
It's all right.
I think that's pretty awesome that you are guarding a panda bear. I mean,
what
better achievement in a game than world peace, right? I mean, really.
Exactly.
Except world annihilation, you know, global destruction. it's either one or the other, right?
Right.
That's kind of the exciting...
That's the sequel.
The goal.
If the panda dies, then it's the world annihilation game.
What if the sequel is about annihilating the world with that panda? What if it becomes a giant panda monster that then rampages across the earth?
You know, I saw on YouTube this video about a panda walking in the wasteland. Did you see that? I think I sent it to you. It's like an anamorphic panda. So like
anamorphic?
Anamorphic. That's what I just said.
Anthropomorphic.
Is it anthropomorphic?
It's anthropomorphic.
Okay. So it's a panda that looks like a person walking around in a post-apocalyptic wasteland. It looks like the Book of Eli with a panda.
Okay.
So maybe that's the sequel to Takenoko.
Let's go for it. Yeah.
Okay.
Makes sense.
Sure, why not?
Okay. Excellent. Yeah.
So what have you been playing lately?
Well, Jason, I think you had something else to talk about.
Yeah, I recently got a chance to play the beta version of AJ Perforio's Hostage Negotiator.
Yeah.
And I've talked about that before on the show, but just a quick summary. It's a solo game. You just one player, And you're a hostage negotiator trying to save the hostages before they get taken out. And it's super fun. It's challenging. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of aspects to it. You use these you have different conversations with the hostage negotiator. With the hostage taker.
Sorry. Okay.
And the whole plan is during the game, you have conversations that at the end of the conversation, then the bad guy steps in, does an action, and that kind of sets up what your next conversation will be.
Okay.
And it's a lot of fun. It's, like I said, it's really challenging because it's a solo game, so you have no one to rely on but yourself.
Hmm.
And the cards, and the choices you make. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. The newest version is super cool. I enjoyed the first version. I like this version even better. So,
okay.
And I'm flattered that I got to play test it. So
cool. That's very exciting.
Have you been playing anything, Robert?
Nothing special. Just a little bit more Dominion. That's about all we've really had time for since...
Can't fault you for that, man.
No. That game. Yeah, Dominion's great. That's really all we've had time for, though, since the holidays. Coming soon. I expect to get my Drunk Quest Kickstarter arriving soon. I'm sure by the time this episode goes up, it will have long since arrived. So that's good. And
did you explain Drunk Quest?
I don't know if I've ever explained what Drunk Quest is on the show. It's Kickstarter that I backed. Okay, I'll talk about that. Sure, why not? It's a Kickstarter that I backed. I think it was over back in July last year. So, it's a card game where it's like a fantasy themed role playing game kind of thing, and all the players are characters.
Let me interrupt here. Base game is pretty much like Munchkin. If you've played Munchkin, it's not a carbon copy, but
similar themes.
It's very like that.
Yeah. And so your character has attack and defense values and stuff, but a monster can do damage to you, and you have to fight the monster. And you can play weapon cards or item cards to change things or to help the monster hurt your opponents and all that kind of stuff. But the way that you fight is by drinking. So if so if the monster has
like in real time.
Yeah, for right. So if the monster has a defense of 3, then you have to take 3 drinks in order to kill that monster. And then every time you kill a monster, you take a treasure, and then there are all kinds of other card effects and things that get in the mix.
And I do remember on the box, on the Kickstarter, it clarified we mean drinks, not like a full drink, like a one gulp.
Okay.
Right.
Because otherwise you will die.
Right.
Trying to play this game.
Yeah,
no, do they have like an asterisk there, like a little fine print saying,
on the Kickstarter they did.
Yeah, they did, right. And I'm sure it's okay. Very clearly stated on the box and in the rule book.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I would think so, yeah.
But the neat thing is, they're not standard sized cards. The cards are like 4 by 6 inches, they're gigantic cards.
Wow.
Yeah, and I'm not really sure. Yeah, right. So I guess when you're really wasted, so it's kind of easier to keep track of what's going on.
I was just thinking, probably when your vision is blurry, those are easier to read than if they weren't.
Yeah, that's the idea, I think. Yeah, so. Anyway, I haven't played yet, but I'm looking forward to getting it soon.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I think now would be a good time.
For what?
In my opinion, to move on to the mechanic of the week.
Oh, what a great idea. Yeah, and I think Anissa is all set to go.
I am, yes.
All right, what do you got?
I've gone back and forth with this, but I've decided to use puzzles as the mechanic of the week.
Mm.
And it's kind of a specific type of puzzle that I was going for. It's twofold, actually, and it's all based from PC and platform games. Okay. So it's not a mechanic I'm familiar with as far as board games go. The two different styles that I was looking at were either adventure game puzzles, a la like a Monkey Island or Grim Fandango, plus the one that you've been promoting, Lily Looking Through,
same sort of
concept where it's you're building, doing puzzles to get to the next step. The whole game is basically puzzle based. And then the other side of that I was looking at would be the mini game. And I'd mentioned this to Jason that I've played Skyrim and they have these little puzzles added in. It's not a big part of the game at all.
Yeah.
But in order to, let's say, like unlock a door, you solve a puzzle in order to get to the next step. And another game that I'm also really familiar with is the Ratchet and Clank series.
Yeah.
And they have that same sort of thing in there where they have a bajillion weapons, but one of the weapons they would have unlocks doors, and you play a little mini game in order to do that. And again, it's just a side thing. It's not a big part of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of twofold. So either the whole game puzzle based or just like an offshoot thing.
Okay. So kind of the puzzle within the game, or even the game within the game concept.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Hence mini game. That's what mini game is.
Yeah. Well, the first thing that jumps to mind is what we talked about before, or the game that I played, Mansions of Madness, one of the Fantasy Flight Arkham horror games. And you know, the broad game is you are these people exploring this crazy mansion of madness. And you come to lock doors. In order to unlock the doors, you have to solve some kind of a puzzle, and it's some kind of a tile puzzle or something, and that works. Sometimes okay, you know. I didn't care for it. I think I said that before. I thought it just kind of got in the way of the gameplay.
Well, if I remember correctly, when you talked about this, when you talked about that game specifically, you said that the mini games kind of the theme, they weren't tied thematically with what you were doing.
Yeah,
and I think that's probably kind of an inherent flaw. If it's not, if you're going to add that, it needs to add to the theme.
Yeah,
right. I mean. So, and I think I like the idea of having a game with the game within a game,
mm-hmm.
Just because it adds that extra layer. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's an interesting mechanic compared to, you know, like for it to be just a small portion of the game. I think that's kind of cool. But I could see thematically it did not fit.
Yeah.
That would be bad. So like, can you give me an example of one in that game, Rob?
There are several different kinds. Might be placing tiles together so that numbers line up. It might be arranging them so that colored symbols match up. But and those you're either arranging these magical symbols to unlock a magically sealed door. Another one, you're arranging numbers. The idea is that you're arranging the tumblers in a lock that you're picking. Okay, that's okay. But then you get to another door to a woodshed, and there's basically 8 tiles that are put down randomly on the table, and they all have pieces of a picture on them. And so you have a certain number of turns to swap and rotate those tiles to assemble a picture that looks like a painting that's hanging on the wall, except it's the lock to unlock the door to the tool shed.
So you're saying, you're like, why is there a painting on the wall of the tool shed door?
Yeah, why is there a scrambled painting of a family on the tool shed out in the backyard? It would, you know, and maybe if I was unlocking a secret door inside the house, all right, I'll let you have that.
Right.
But the idea of putting that on the tool shed out in the backyard was kind of dumb.
So where are they random?
Yeah, I didn't set the game up. I didn't set up that specific scenario. But from what I understood, the person who was playing the keeper, the game master, was just following the instructions in the rule book. Maybe she put the wrong thing there. I don't know. But in general, it just kind of felt kind of clunky and like it was getting in the way of us continuing our adventure.
Okay.
And I think that's it, tied in with this adventure idea game that you brought up, Anissa, that, you know, I grew up playing King's Quest and Space Quest and all those great old Sierra games, you know, and moved into LucasArts games too. So I know exactly what you're talking about. I love all those. And the reason that they were great is because all those puzzles and those features and whatever mini games were put in there all served the story and served the adventure.
Right.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, though, would that become a hindrance if you put it into a board game version? Because once you've finished the puzzle, you've finished the puzzle. So it kind of made me think of Grant on one of your last couple episodes mentioned Rift's Legacy and how there's not a huge replayability factor there. Like once you finish this massive campaign, then, you know, the game's kind of done. However, he enjoyed it so much that is that worth it? And same thing with, the same thing can be said to the PC games that I enjoy. Yeah. Once I've played Monkey Island, yeah, I'll go back just for some of the gags and the spoofs, but I know the puzzle, so I can just click, 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 and I'm done.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's necessarily a negative inherently, or...
it definitely changes the approach a person has to take with that game. You're right. By putting those things together, you kind of, well, thinking in this adventure game context, you're kind of doing it to tell a story and to help people feel like they've accomplished something while moving that story forward, I guess, in the adventure game thing. And hopefully the story is written well enough so that people will be happy to come back and experience that story again, even if they know all the solutions to all the puzzles.
Right.
Yeah. And in a board game, that can be a real challenge. You're right.
Here's an idea for an application for that. We've talked about this before when we talked about electronic, the idea of having electronic pieces to your game.
Yeah.
And we did say that was kind of gimmicky, but here's a time when I think it could actually work. Mm-hmm. If you make a free app, tablet based, that you can download with like a code from the game or some crap, I don't know, something like that, right? Not my problem right now, but so you could store puzzles in there. So when you're on the board and you get to a point where you have to open a door, you're like, open wood door, shed, and then it throws up a puzzle onto your screen that fits that, not, you know, a painting on a wooden door on the, you know, work shed.
Yeah.
You do that. Now, one thing that's cool is, obviously, you can store 1,000 puzzles in there, or enough to where the number becomes arbitrary, right? It's not like you're going to, because with a board game, I guess I see the same thing. You're going to run out of puzzles.
Yeah.
Now, granted, if the puzzle is like a shift puzzle to where you're trying to make a picture, you can't just memorize that because it's going to be different every time it gets set up.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah.
And that's the idea.
Yeah. Then you just randomly throw those tiles out there. Yeah.
Right. I think that, Anissa, I think you have a good point with something like Risk Legacy. That is a good point, that there are people that are very happy. I mean, everyone I know that's played Risk Legacy, yeah, Grant included, have said that when they're done with that game, they will have feel like they more than got their money out of it.
Right.
So, I think for a game like that, a mechanic like that would serve pretty well.
Well, I guess the fear is, you'd mentioned quite a long time back this terrible riddle game that you'd played.
Mind Trap, Jason, right?
Mind Trap, yeah, Mind Trap, yep.
So I guess the fear then would be that you're making something that terrible, that why would you want to wade through these puzzles? You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the flip side of that, where people would think, not only did they not get their money's worth, it was a waste of time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
And I don't know if there's enough incentive there, even as a designer, to not fall into that trap.
I think you could be right. Gosh, but I always want to make the mechanics work.
Well,
let's try to be a Debbie Downer, you know?
Anissa's like, I brought this great mechanic. By the way, it's not going to work in board games. Sorry about your life.
Well, here's one thing, okay? I have this game, Redneck Life, that we've talked about before, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, right. So Redneck Life, the idea is, it just like the game of life, you start out your life, and in the game you're following your life as a redneck, starting with, you know, with getting married and having a bunch of youngins, and then getting divorced and getting remarried and having a bunch more youngins and all that stuff, right? Buying a house, buying a car. Okay. At certain points in the game, as you move along the board, because it's a linear board, you move in one direction, start to finish. At certain points, it makes you stop. And it says, okay, now you need to roll a die on the, roll two dice on the career sheet. And you roll two dice and it tells you what your career is for the rest of your year, rest of your life, and it tells you how much money you're going to make every time you pass a certain milestone at that point in the game. So that idea of you're rolling a die or two dice and comparing on a board, that's kind of a little mini game, isn't it?
Well, I mean, it is, but it's completely random.
Well, yeah, but then we keep going, and you get to a point where it says, oh, you get to another stopping point, and you say, you get divorced, okay? And you have to spend this much money to cover your divorce. But you have a choice. You can say, if you sleep with a lawyer, then that cost is cut in half. Right. But then you have to roll to see how many youngins you get out of that.
Right.
You know?
I forgot about that.
And then later in the game, you can land on a space that says, hey, if you slept with the lawyer, you got to pay however much in child support. So you know, that's a really simple idea, but you can do that kind of thing and get to a certain milestone and not just say roll a die and a random result, but what you can say is, here, I'm going to give you a choice of what you want to do at this point, and based on what you choose, and then add some randomness into it, kind of makes it like its own kind of mini game.
Well, and it's like a choose your own adventure game then, like those books used to be.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking too. Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe that's an interesting way to come at it in this board game context. I mean, that's a roll and move game, so it's a real simple thing, and it's meant to be silly and kind of dumb and funny. But, you know, could you fit that into some kind of a real board game that's about an adventure?
I think you could. I mean, we kind of do it with cards, right? I mean, you could do it with cards, I guess is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go into, like, I'm looking for treasure in this room in a role-playing game, right?
Yeah.
And you've got a deck of treasure cards, and you flip it over and see what you got. And it's either treasure or a monster that eats your face.
Mm-hmm. That's just a random thing, though.
You're still making a choice, is what I mean.
Go one direction or the other.
The dice roll definitely gives you more options. Because then you could even have it be three deep, right? Like, I'm going to choose to do this. Roll the dice. This is what happens. I'm going to choose to do that. Roll the dice. This is what happens.
Yeah, and one thing about Redneck Life, about those moments of Redneck Life, is that, I mean, the main point of the game is to get from point A to point B, and these are obstacles to get in your way along that path. And they enhance the story, and they enhance, not necessarily the story, but, you know, they enhance the user, the player experience. It's a narrative, loosely. So if we're going to do, we're going to have a narrative thing here, and we're going to have little moments of pause and play this mini game. And it might, you know, another part of the game is they say, hey, at this point, you can go to the casino and you can gamble if you want to. And anybody else who wants to can join in on this. And so everybody has a chance to gamble. And again, you're playing this little mini game. So you know, you could do that. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a linear move your game piece around a set track on the board kind of idea. It could be done in actually a lot of different ways.
Well, are either of you familiar with the Tales of the Arabian Nights game?
Not the game, no. I mean, I know the stories, but not the game.
Well, it's a board game based on the stories, actually.
Okay.
But it comes with this big board. It's a map, mostly in Middle East. It includes, like, India. And I think it goes as far west as, like, England. But it's back in the same sort of time frame as when the Arabian Nights tales were set.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is it's basically a choose-your-own-adventure game.
Hmm.
And it comes with this giant book that is probably an inch thick, at least. And the funny part is the first page basically tells you that this is not the rule book, so don't freak out. It has all these paragraphs in there of the story that you're evolving as you play. And really, you don't have a whole, there's a lot of randomness to this game. You don't have a whole lot of choices. You can move your character on the map, and as where you place your character, it does influence what paragraph gets read and how your story evolves.
Yeah.
But in a game like that, I could see adding some sort of aspect with a puzzle. Because you have these encounters, you draw cards from a deck, and you have an encounter with, say, like a serpent on this island. And depending on where you are, if you're on an island or if you're in the water or in the middle of the desert, it influences what happens. And then one of the other players reads the paragraph that your matrix, it's this very involved thing. Anyway, your other player reads this paragraph and then gives you choices. Well, do you have these certain talent aspects? Can you do this? Can you talk your way out of it? So in that sort of regard, I could see adding more puzzle-based, something that you have more actual influence over.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I think that's so what I'm hearing here is, let me sum up for the audience so they catch up. I think that we're saying that as a choose-your-own-adventure type minigame, this could actually work pretty well in a game.
Yeah.
The full-on mini game might be tough with like a puzzle or something where you're moving pieces around on the board. But, you know, like Anissa just said, I mean, a one-inch thick book added to the game was able to, I mean, add hundreds, I'm sure, hundreds and hundreds of probably paragraphs you could read, right, for different scenarios.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Lots of story changes and variability and a unique adventure every time, I guess.
Yeah, you hardly run into the same thing. So, and of course, you're not going to remember what choice should I have made here. It's near impossible unless, you know, that's all you play, I suppose.
Right.
Huh. Photographic memory.
Yeah, that sounds neat. That sounds neat. Okay. Yeah. So, and I think we're saying that this can work in this kind of story, this kind of adventure thing. And maybe everybody's working together. Maybe everybody's competing for the same goal. Adding in some kind of little puzzle interruptions or mini game interruptions or something to try and change. And maybe some of it's random, some of it's based on decisions that are made in that mini game, kind of changing the direction that your path is going to flow.
Well, in a game like Redneck Life, I mean, that literally is the most fun part of the game. Now, granted, it's a roll and move game, so it's not like it's a Euro or something, but that's the most fun part of the game. So, I mean, it's for a game, it's valid. I mean, it's different.
Yeah.
I'm interested. I would not want to write that much text. That would be my vote against it. But then again, if it was just tables, if you were going to make tables, I could get on board with that. That would be fun.
Yeah. Huh. That's... Yeah, I like that. I like that. Okay, that's got me thinking now. It's got me thinking about different ways to do it apart from just a simple roll and move idea, but have you play some game that will end up changing the path that you're going to take on this board. And
that would be interesting if the game was, you know, the purpose was to get from one side of the board to the other, or from from a starting place on the board to a finishing place.
Yeah.
But it was not roll and move. But it was choose your own adventure to get yourself there.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool, especially if you're rewarding strategy and good decisions.
Yeah.
You know, and that kind of stuff.
You know, one thing that you could do is you could have the game played with a deck of cards that allow movement or action or whatever, and then just have a crazy array of different kinds of symbols and numbers and letters and things all around the border of the card. And then, you know, you can somehow every time you get to a different pass selection, make you draw cards from the deck or something to try and make a combo of symbols that match whatever's on your path choice. Or make sets or pairs. I don't know. This is what I've got bouncing around in my head here. I'm thinking back to that Red Dragon Inn game that I have, the gambling I'm in.
Right.
Where it's just this generic fantasy themed deck of cards, but every card has like 12 different kinds of symbols that can be used in 25 different kinds of games to play with this deck. And by putting a bunch of information on there, it allows, you know, for the same deck of cards to be used for a ton of different games with a ton of different play styles. You know, that could be something neat to explore.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
Cool.
Thanks. Cool.
I like it. Good topic.
Yes.
Good topic.
It was a little touch and go there for a minute, but yeah, I think. Why don't you pull it out?
You've heard the show before, so.
Right, that's kind of standard procedure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we should go ahead and move into to our practicing the pitch segment, and you're gonna pitch a game for us, right?
I sure am.
Yeah. Now you are an aspiring game designer, much like ourselves.
Yes, I am. That's actually how I stumbled upon your lovely podcast here.
All right, excellent. Yes, and we're very excited. You sent us a copy, like a prototype here, of what you've got, and I've looked at your cards, and I'm very interested to hear what this is.
Okay. Well, the working title is Robots versus Monsters, and that pretty much sums up the game. It is Robots versus Monsters.
Okay.
It's a robot building combat game is what I'm sort of calling it, I suppose. I sent along the two-player rules for you guys because I only sent you half of the actual. The deck is ginormous. It was.
I did. I was like.
It was because
I got. I got to see it when we met, and when you sent the deck, I thought, "Whoa, she really pared this down." Because I remember you brought in like. A shoebox, like, full of cards.
It was a lot of cards. Well, and I think you guys talk a lot about marketability and that sort of stuff. And thinking about it, I thought, you know, this is crazy. This is a lot of cards. And while I have play tested up to 4 players, I figured, you know what? You could just buy 2 of the same game and then be able to play it with the 4 players. Like, oh, it is valid. The work.
And that
but
is...
to keep Yeah.
That's not unheard of, because we talked about the game we're all gaga for, Castellon.
Yeah.
That's the same way that game works. The Steve Jackson game said, if you want to play four player, buy two copies of the game.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's not at all unprecedented. Yeah. Yeah.
So
no, and I think it just makes a lot more sense that way with this, because it got out of hand, but you needed that many cards.
Sure.
In order to have the four people. So yeah. Anyway, but I also have a solitaire version. So
okay.
Awesome.
Yeah. Anyway, so you are the robots. They are the monsters. And we had to chant that to ourselves because my husband and I, when we first started playtesting this, would say, okay, we're going to build our monsters now. And we had to keep repeating, no, we are the robots. They are. So I got to keep that straight. But anyway, there are two decks of cards, and there's a monster deck and a robot deck. In the robot deck, you have torsos, heads, arms, legs, upgrades, one-time use cards, and lose and or steal cards.
Okay.
So there's a take-that element with that, the lose and steal cards. The idea and how I went about designing this game was the wave system of monsters. I'm pretty sure you guys are familiar with Plants vs. Zombies.
Yeah, sure. Yep.
And you have the different waves of zombies coming at you, and it's like, okay, I got through that one, on to the next one. Same thing with these monsters, and the monsters do actually step up the farther into the game you get. They get stronger.
Okay.
But hopefully your robot will also get stronger as the game goes on. And that's where the building comes in. When you fight your different rounds, you're able to win more robot points or robot parts and build your build your robot up. So I kind of envision this game happening in a junkyard.
Okay.
That's actually it's highlighted on the card. The back of it is the little junkyard.
Pile of junk, yeah.
It's so like a futuristic junkyard. You're fighting in a junkyard, and you're fighting against each other. But to some degree, and in some rounds, you kind of have to play cooperatively. Huh. Because you can't pass a wave of monsters unless you all get through it together.
Okay.
That makes sense. So a little competitive.
So yes, competitive.
So we are both independently trying to build our own robots.
Yes.
And
you are both trying to take out the monsters. You want to get the most monsters. That's the win condition, is the monster points that you get.
All right.
But again, in this fantasy version of you in a junkyard as a robot,
yeah,
you're basically fighting the monsters and elbowing your competitor there so he doesn't get the extra monster.
Got it. But you still have to work together so the monsters don't overwhelm you both.
Absolutely. Because if they overwhelm you both, you lose. You drop off body parts.
This reminds me of a futuristic version of, I'm sure everyone's seen The Lord of the Rings by now. It's like Gimli and Legolas killing orcs in the Battle of Helm's Deep, but they're counting. That's what this sparks in my mind.
Yes. Yeah, totally. Yeah. I can see that.
Friendly competition between junk assembled robots, I guess. Yeah. All right, go on. Sorry.
All right. So to actually talk about the actual game, I suppose I've given you the setup. You start off by drawing cards. You each get, I believe, 5 cards. We've gone back and forth with however many cards, and I still am playtesting the crap out of this, so.
Sure.
Bear with me, but anyway, you get a certain amount of cards of the robot deck, and the robot deck does include the parts, the upgrades, and the one-time use, all that stuff. You then have a robot building phase, and in front of you, you build the robot. So you kind of put it in the way that the robot would be built. Their head would go on top, the torso, arms, and legs. And unless otherwise stated, which as of now I haven't gone into that yet, you can only have 2 arms, 2 legs, 1 torso, 1 head. So your basic humanoid robot.
Got it. So no monstrosities with 6 arms.
No, exactly. Not yet. I've contemplated adding that in there, but then the variables just go insane.
Sure.
So
right now, for the expansion.
That's a great expansion to be able to have extra legs and arms.
So you've built your robot in front of you. And then you take a face-up card from the same robot deck. if you get a body part, you automatically add that on to the robot you have built. So let's say you have a head in front of you, on the table in front of you,
yep,
and you draw one. No matter if it's better or worse, you replace your head and put that in your hand. So you still get to keep it. You don't have to chunk it. But it may help and or hinder you during gameplay that round. So everybody goes around and draws their face-up card. There are also the steal or lose. So if you get a lose your head, then you would discard that body part.
Got it.
After the face-up card is drawn, you fight the monsters. And the wave of monsters comes in. And I have it set up where you fight one more monster than the amount of players. So if there's just two of us, you draw three monsters.
Got it.
You have to defeat all three monsters in order to get to the next wave. And the number of monsters doesn't change, but on each monster card right now, they're all mummies.
Yeah.
Saw that.
Yeah.
That's about all I could draw.
Sure.
So, but I'm thinking more like classic movie monsters. So it's going to be Frankenstein's monster, mummies, vampires, that sort of thing, like all the classic stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you draw those three, and they always stay the same. The number, that is. But as you get higher in the rounds, their point value goes up.
Oh, and I see you've got that right here on the card. That's awesome that it's just wave one, there two, then three. Yeah, that's awesome.
Okay.
How it just goes up like that.
Depending on which wave, they're that much stronger.
Yeah.
Got it.
And they're each worth different points depending on, like, their base point may be worth something. And some of the monsters have an asterisk on there, and that means they're special monsters, so they either drop extra prizes, which would be the next phase after you fought the monsters, you get prizes.
Okay.
They might drop extra prizes, or they may be worth double the monster point at the end. And it's kind of, I wanted to do it where there's a lot of math involved in this game. I'm a big math fan, which is funny because I decided to come up with this game, and when we first started, it was literally like all just math all the time. And I thought, what am I doing to myself? And so that's why we streamlined this. We put it with the wave, you know, their point values were on the card. You don't have to worry about what wave is this and what are they worth this time and that sort of deal.
Good idea.
Yeah.
But,
good idea.
All math all the time is not fun for me. So I thought.
Yeah. Well, I'm with you on that.
Same here.
Yeah.
I'm bad at math.
Yeah.
And there is actually a lot of math. I mean, you do have to add up how much your robot is worth. The other, I guess I didn't mention that there's a battle leader, and you pick whichever player you want to be the battle leader, or you roll for it, or whatever you do. And that person chooses, they go first, they look at this wave of monsters, and they say, so there's two of us playing, and there's three monsters in this wave, and they can take all three of the monsters. So they say, I'm going to take on all three of the monsters. And, of course, that's when some of the take that can come into play with the one-time use. And you're able to use those one-time use cards at any time. So your opponent is going to throw down a -4 towards you, and now you can only take two monsters.
Okay.
And that benefits another player because now they're able to collect one monster during that round. Or maybe they're able to collect two more, you know, depends on what you throw at each other.
Sure.
But now,
but again, you don't want to sabotage each other to the point where you can't complete the round. Or maybe you do. If you decide that's a risk worth taking, I will drop off. And when you lose a round, you lose the least valuable body part you have. So if it's only +1 and you know you have a +1 or +2 in your hand that you can replace it immediately, maybe it's worth throwing that round. Because it's just going to hinder the other player.
Right. That's a good, that adds a nice layer of strategy.
It sure does, yeah.
And I've noticed playing with my husband that there becomes this sort of curve that in the beginning, you don't want to take that too much. Otherwise, you can't fight and you can't defeat the monsters at all.
Yeah.
And in the middle, it's almost like the take that stuff's just flying. And then towards the end, the monsters are ramped up to the fact that you don't really want to start throwing too much at each other again.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I don't know if that's because it's so predictable, if that's necessarily a good thing. So we're, you know, again, I'm playtesting it quite a lot just to see.
Sure.
I don't know. Every time we playtested, it seemed to be pretty fun. And even if you're, you know, throwing that take that at each other. But I like the fact that it's not overwhelmingly take that.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that is cool because take that's fun, but you know, you also have to have a good base, like we're doing, you know, something cool here.
Yeah, that's important.
And I think with the competitive style, that really helps the take that, because the take that just enhances that.
Yeah.
You know, because you have to work together, but you can screw each other over, and that I think that's fun.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, there are, how many waves? Because I believe waves are what ends the game. Is that correct?
Yes. There's six for a two-player game.
Okay.
And it goes down for the number of players, because clearly the game can get out of hand with, if you just play six rounds for four or five people, it gets really long.
Yeah.
So right now I'm at six, and I think that's a pretty decent. It's about 30 to 45 minutes.
But certainly, which I think is, would it break the game if somebody was like, I want to play a shorter game, let's do a three-round game?
No, not at all. And that's actually what I have as part of the solitaire. My oldest son, who is totally in love with the idea of me doing the games, he's just loved it. In fact, Jason, he was pretty much your sales pitch guy when we met.
He was.
But
I think he could have come on the show and pitched the game. Yeah. He was very good at selling it.
He was. It was awesome. But he looks at me one day and says, hey, can you play it by yourself? And I thought, huh, can you? I don't know. And so I started playtesting it, and it's definitely, you can do a solitaire version where it's a press your luck, where you say to yourself, I'm going to try and take one monster. So you pull the one monster, and you can easily take that one. So then you flip the next monster over, and you say, okay, I can take that one. Hmm. Well, if you can't take the next, you flip one more, and you can't take that, you lost the round, you lose a body part. So, but you try and best how many monsters you So each time you can either say, oh, I'm going to do one round, two rounds, 10 rounds if, you know, you're really bored and have nothing else to do, or, you know, so it's definitely pliable. You can move it around. You can do more waves. If you wanted to, with two people, to add four monsters in there and see if you could try that, you know, it's definitely movable, I guess.
Yeah, it's versatile that way.
It is.
And versatile. Hey, that's the right word.
But I like this is a different setup than what we're used to. I like it with the waves being how you determine how you're going to move forward and how challenging everything is. I really dig that because it's different. One thought I had for tracking purposes that might, I don't know how big the robots get plus-wise, but if it was, say, less than 20 on average, or in general, you know, like, you couldn't build a robot that was better than a plus 20, right?
Right.
Then you could easily throw in 20-sided dice that you could constantly have in front of you, right? So when you add or subtract a body part, you just adjust that 20-sided die. That might make
you... I love the fact that you're helping me not do as much math.
Well, I'm all about not doing math in general. And that was one of the things about Munchkin. Like, you're always constantly... Yeah. Which is a game like this where you're constantly...
Right.
Adding to your character and losing stuff. And it's like, what a great idea to just, I have a 20-sided die. That's my, and it, you use a die in Munchkin, but it's actually to track your level
because
your level is constantly going up. But so a 20-sided die might work. I don't know, again, how big the robots get. Maybe a 20 is not enough. If a 20 is not enough, putting a die in bigger than that's probably
not
cost
effective. They get a little higher than 20, but they don't generally get that much higher than 20. Yeah. I'd say 22 would be the max, but again, I mean, if you could keep it where they can't get any more than 20, that would be a definite, like, a better way to keep track of things without having to, okay, now where was I again, and what did I lose this round?
Well, you could also just use two D10s, one to track the, you know, the 10's place, one to track the 1's place. That's what they do in Sentinels of the Multiverse. The characters' hit points are tracked with two D10s, and you just rotate them.
That's a really good idea, Rob.
Yeah.
Take Rob's idea. It's better than
it's
mine.
It's a good idea. Okay.
Well, I mean, if you can fit it on a D20, that's simple. That's just one piece of plastic you need to throw in there or ask people to provide. But if you need to go over 20, then that's a nice alternative.
I want to ask you, though, unlike Sentinels, if you do make this game, I request that you actually put the dice in the game.
Yeah.
Because that is the biggest flaw with Sentinels, that it's a $50 game that you have to
provide your own dice.
Exactly.
Yeah.
For D10s. It's not like they're expensive or anything.
Well, I think their expanded edition set comes with some D10s.
Good. Good.
I don't know that for sure, but I think it does.
That was one of the things that bothered me most about that game. I love the game, but it's like, oh, look, I'm paying $50 and they can't give me dice.
How many D10s do you have?
I mean, I have like 100 D10s.
Yeah, because I've got almost 100.
But I mean, I'm
not the principle of the thing. Gosh darn it.
You pay for a game. All the components you need to play the game should be in the game. Am I wrong or am I right?
I agree with you on that. Yeah.
No, I agree too. Yeah.
Yeah. Right on. Robots versus Monsters.
Robots versus Monsters.
Working title.
Working title. Or We Are the Robots. They Are the Monsters.
I like that.
That way you remember. Yeah.
We Are the Robots.
That way I can... Because clearly I have trouble with this, so...
Yeah. So the title is We Are the Robots, subtitled They Are the Monsters.
Yes.
I kind of like that, too.
Yeah. Or just, you could call it War of Monsters versus Robots. No, that's terrible.
So you just made the title longer, but it's the same thing. Wow, Rob, you're awesome. Good work out of you.
Yeah.
How about We Are the Robots? Let's go kill some monsters. Actually, I kind of like We Are the Robots, subtitle They Are the Monsters. It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Because I know that if I read that game title, that would get my attention. Mm-hmm. Because it's different. You know,
Yeah.
You're like, what?
We are the robots.
Yeah.
They are the monsters.
And who doesn't want to be the robots? Because.
Precisely. I think we should probably wrap up here for tonight. Do we have any plugs we want to throw out here? Anissa, do you have a website or maybe we can plug your Twitter?
I don't have a website, but I do have a Twitter. I'm at Tangerini. It's TANGERINI.
All right. Very good. and is that all we got?
I think that's it. I don't have any plugs tonight.
No, I don't either. We didn't want to take any attention away from you.
Oh, crap. I don't have any plugs either.
Okay, that's all right. Then we're all set. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Building the Game. We really appreciate it. You can check out our website, which is buildingthegamepodcast.com. You can email us to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at podcastbtg. Jason is at JASlingerland, and I am at poorly_designed. And Anissa is at Tangerini. You can listen to us on iTunes and give us a 5-star review, and you can like us on Facebook. That would be pretty cool too. And you can keep on coming back every week and listening to our show. It's all thanks to you guys out there that we're making friends, good friends like Anissa, and meeting people and having the success that we're having with the show. So thanks so much, everybody. Thank you again, Anissa, for hanging out with us tonight.
Thank you.
And that's it.
All right. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Okay.
Good night.
Watch out! Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game. You're sneering at me. Did I get that wrong? Did I have the episode number wrong?
Is it 34?
Yeah, it's 34.
I thought it was 33.
No, it's 34. We just did 33. Oh,
can we redo that? That was lame.
Why? This is funny.
Let's redo it. I don't want to take away from you being able to do your introduction, so.
You do that every time. All right. Starting over.